Paddy Power and the Football Show. The greatest football partnership since Shearer and Owen.
All right, it's Thursday, it's off the ball, it's 7:30, so it's time to talk to John Giles. Evening, John.
Nathan.
I want to start with this story about Bournemouth, one of the more bizarre and strange stories that have come up in the Premier League this season. So if anyone hasn't somehow missed this, Bournemouth have opened a dialogue with the Premier League regarding the conduct of referee John Moss during Sunday's defeat at Sheffield United. Their midfielder Dan Gosling told the newspapers, "I thought he was a disgrace. The comments that he made, especially to me and one other player, talking about the relegation zone, and you're still in the relegation zone, you're having one, your team's having one, this and that. It was all very disrespectful. I thought it was very disrespectful what he was saying." Bournemouth haven't made an official complaint as yet, but they have asked the Premier League to explore microphone recordings of conversations Moss had during the game. It seems a most unusual type of complaint, but should referees be talking to players like that?
They always have done, Nathan. And what you've got to say, what about what was Gosling saying to the referee? Mm. And I know from my own experience, I had as many referees as anybody else, Nathan. And there's much more disrespect shown to the referees than the referees to the players. Definitely. And I don't know what he's on about. I mean, I saw Chris Sutton in the paper, I think it was yesterday, calling them snowflakes for players who objected to referees having a bit of a go at them. Mm. It's definitely more so on the other side from the players being disrespectful to the referee than the other way around. It was in my day, and I'm pretty sure it's the same today.
I would have always assumed, not just even slightly one-sided, but that it was almost a one-way street when in terms of the conversation and the abuse, that it was players directing it at referees, that it would be very rare that a referee might bite back.
Well, you can see it yourself, Nathan, on when you're watching a match on the television. You can see referees all the time. Players all the time up in the referees' faces. And I was saying that I was just as bad myself when I did it, but I never complained about a referee having to go back. And a few of them did, Nathan, you know. But definitely the players show more disrespectful to the referees than the other way around. I just don't get that at all. I mean, they were beaten the other day. Nobody likes being beaten, but for players to complain about the referees' behaviour, I find incredible.
I guess, like, referees are obviously impartial and certainly meant to be impartial, that if a referee is speaking to a player on one side like that, that they can feel that maybe that impartiality is somewhat tarnished, that maybe they're being seen to take sides.
Now, well, what would have happened? The referee might have been responding to the stick they were getting from the players, Nathan. It happens. You know, I don't think it's changed that much for my day. It's when you see players even playing today, a throw-in, they'll go mad over it, you know, if it goes against them. A free kick, it's up with the referees. The VAR, for example, if the referee's giving us, they're all around the referee. The referees get terrible abuse. And again, I was no saint. I was just as bad as anybody else. You know, I'd actually had a funny experience, Nathan, when I was playing for Leeds against West Brom. We were running for the league, and there was a fellow called Ray Tinkler who was the referee. And a very, very important match, and he gave one terrible decision, which led to West Brom beating us, and actually probably lost the league for it. And the crowd got on the pitch, and all sorts. Actually, we had to play four games away from home the next day. There was murders over it. And then I went to West Brom, and we had one match to go on the season at Oldham. We had to win to get promotion. Who was the referee?
Your old friend.
Mr. Tinkler was the referee, and it was his last match as a referee, Nathan.
Right.
You know? And we were winning 1-0, we were hanging on near the end, and I thought he'd never blow the whistle. And I said, "Would you blow this effing whistle?" I said, "I can remember you from Leeds." He said, "Yeah, and I remember you as well."
what happened next?
We got through. We got through, Nathan. It was just the way it was. But he could have reported me for that. Do you know what I mean? Like that used to happen all the time. You see it today. If a throw-in goes against it, they're on the go. They're at the referee, the linesman. I see sometimes it should be yellow carded, sent off. But for a player, you know, to Gosling, to be reporting the referee for some remarks that he made on the pitch, I find incredible.
We actually have a text in from Chris, who was at the game. He says, the ref got in the way and helped Bournemouth score their goal. I was surprised VAR didn't look at it, but it didn't. So they've absolutely nothing to moan about. If their players spend as much time chasing and harrying opposition instead of rolling around the ground, they'd be higher up the table. I guess that touches on a key point to this as well, why there doesn't seem to be much sympathy for Bournemouth. They just come across as bad losers.
Well, you do, Nathan. You know, I never played in the team where you said, geez, that referee was great today. You know, you get decisions against you, and even though, because you're in the heat of the moment when you're playing in a match, you want everything to go your way, especially when you go a goal behind. In Bournemouth's case, they needed the points, they're in a desperate situation, and you'll go against the referee all the time. But it's always exaggerated. It's always exaggerated. And again, I'll go back to my own time. If we were losing a match and the referee gave a throw, it was out of proportion to the decision, you know what I mean? Mm. Because you were wound up and you just wanted to go your way and the referee's against you. You always felt the referee was against you. I hardly ever played in a match when I said, God, that referee was in our favour. Never. It doesn't happen. So to be complaining about the referee being disrespectful, I just find it incredible.
Generally, it's said that good referees have a sort of constant dialogue and conversation with players during a game. I would imagine that it's quite even-tempered most of the time, but they're explaining their decisions, they're telling them what their thinking is. Those examples you're talking about, when you'd be having a pop at the referee, would they often come back? Would they often start throwing things back at you?
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah, in a big way.
And did you care?
In a big way. But that was part of the game. Never ever thought of reporting them for anything.
Mm.
I said, that was just part of it. And some of the referees were better than others. You know what I mean? You would have a few words here and there with the referee, but it was only if it was in your favour. Mm. You know, you wouldn't be nice to the referee if you say, "Oh, I understand what you did there, referee. It was against you."
So you didn't try and, I'm thinking of maybe the rugby example, which has obviously come up over the past few months with Ireland, and how rugby captains have a conversation with referee and how they can influence referees, and that Rory Best was very good at it, and it was one of the questions over Jonathan Sexton coming in, that he was a bit more vocal when it came to referees, and that maybe that wasn't the best way of managing them. Did you think you had a good relationship with referees, that you were able to influence them, or was it just not a factor?
I didn't have a very good relationship with the referees. The only good relationship I had, and I can't think of his name, was, you mentioned it, covered the Kevin Keegan incident at Wembley. I should have been sent off, and I knew the referee over the years, and said sorry to him before, and he let me away with it. But generally speaking, no matter how nice a referee wanted to be to the players, I'm not just talking about but most of the players, if the decision went against them, the player, they'd give him a mouthful.
Mm.
Regardless of how well they were supposed to be getting on.
From
you're only being nice with referees. You're only nice to the referees so you get them on your side.
Yeah.
That was it.
From Bournemouth's point of view then, so they're currently in 16th place in the Premier League. They're 2 points outside the relegation zone. It's been a really tough few months for them. They'd major problems in front of goal. Just from the footballing side of things, are you able to put your finger on what's gone wrong for Eddie Howe and his team this season?
Well, again, if they're not taking the chances, I think he's done a terrific job over the years to get them to where they are and still are. I think he was bound to hit a season, Nathan, like this, where things would go against you. Every team does. And they obviously don't have the resources some of the other teams have. So it's a bit more desperate, I think, for them when they get into this position. Because he's done a great job year in and year out for, at least 5, 6, 7 or 8 years at Bournemouth. So they are under pressure. And he doesn't have the resources that other teams have to go out and buy big players. But, you know, their spirit is very, very good. And I like Eddie Howe, and I hope they do get out of trouble.
Would the best thing for Eddie Howe to do now just come out and say, listen, everyone was a bit emotional after the game. We understand that the referee's doing his job. We're not going to make a big issue of this. Let's just try and move on and quieten this down as quickly as possible?
Oh, definitely, Nathan. You know, I don't know if he, I don't, I, like Gosling might have got to the press before he had the chance to cool it down. You know, I think that's what's happened there. But I, from what I read in the papers today, that the associations have ignored the protest from the players. I'd say he would not be in favour of it at all. I think he'd like to see the end of it and get on with the job. He's been in the game long enough to know, Nathan, that there's no win in this particular situation.
You touched on players' general reactions now to bad decisions, and even if it's an offside through VAR, where it's not even the referee really making that final call, it's all down to the technology.
Yeah.
Does it upset you, frustrate you in any way that, like, some of the things you see on television now and some of the language that's coming from the players, it does feel as though it's a step up and has sort of gone off the edge of the cliff in terms of what's acceptable over the last few years?
I think it was just as bad in my day, Nathan. And I was as bad as anybody else. The thing is, they don't have as much coverage. They didn't have as much coverage on the television in my day as they have today. I mean, everything is recorded now, and close-ups and all that. Actually, in my day, all the matches weren't televised, Nathan. You might have one or two matches on the weekend televised. So, no, I would like to take credit for that, but I certainly couldn't.
Just before we take a break, we have a text in from Patrick. Nathan, has John memories of playing with Andy McAvoy for Ireland? Seemed to be a great goal poacher for Ireland and for Blackburn.
Yes. I played with him in the international team. I played against him. He was a terrific player and a great goal scorer. He didn't want to live in England. He wanted to get home,
right,
Nathan. He was a brave lad, and he wanted to get home. I played against him one Christmas. I think Blackburn were second in the league, and he was second leading goal scorer to Jimmy Greaves. And he was. And I said, "How are you doing? You're going really well. Are you enjoying it?" And he says, "No, I want to go home."
Right.
And he went home prematurely. I think he went to play in was it Waterford or Limerick?
Limerick. Yeah, he went back to Limerick.
Limerick. Yeah, but Andy was like, he was a terrific player. He was up there with Jimmy Greaves scoring goals that particular year, but he didn't like Blackburn. He was a terrific player.
Yeah, brilliant goal scoring record. 89 goals in 183 appearances for Blackburn, six goals for Ireland. As you mentioned, he was joint top scorer with Jimmy Greaves back in 1965. He had 29 goals that season.
Yeah.
Talking of Jimmy Greaves, he's been in the news this week. We might talk to him. I'm just going to take a quick break and we'll come back and talk about that in a moment.
Paddy Power. As much a part of Irish football as celebrating a home draw.
All right, you're welcome back. Just a reminder that this coming Monday, we're going to be at the Alex Hotel with thanks to Virgin Media. And all this week, we're giving you the chance to win flights, accommodation and tickets to Manchester City against Real Madrid on St. Patrick's Day with thanks to Virgin Media Sport. To enter, you can identify our mystery voice and who's got a habit of showing up to training in odd socks.
Often they don't match up. Often, sometimes they do, but often they don't.
Text your name and answer to 53106 for 30 cents. We'll get back to you after the show. It's all with thanks to Virgin Media Sport, with over 400 UEFA Champions League, Europa League and Nations League games all live this season. It is available to all Virgin Media TV customers who can download the TV Anywhere app and stream all the action whenever and wherever they like. John Giles is on the line with us. 53106 is the text number if you want to get in touch. John, I mentioned Jimmy Greaves there just before the ad break. He's been in the news this week because the Daily Mail have been leading an online campaign to honour Jimmy Greaves and to get him an OBE. I can't believe he doesn't have an OBE already.
Yeah.
He's 79 now. Jimmy Greaves, unfortunately, has been suffering from ill health for the last 4 or 5 years. He suffered a severe stroke back in 2015. Just underline how brilliant a player Jimmy Greaves was. Some of the statistics. He scored 100 league goals before his 21st birthday at Chelsea. Scored a club record 220 league goals for Spurs. In total, 422 goals in 602 club appearances. Your career is very much would have overlapped, same age, around English football. I imagine you came up against each other many, many times.
Yeah, he started a bit younger than me at Chelsea. I think he's the only player to score 100 goals for two different clubs. But he's loads of records. Now, this is before the Premiership started. Mm. You know, everything started anew when the Premier League started. But Jimmy Greaves, for example, Shearer is the leading goal scorer ever in the Premier League. Jimmy Greaves scored 50 goals more than Alan Shearer in his career. He was a genius, in my opinion, Nathan. What a finisher. This was a time when the pitches weren't great.
Mm.
I played against probably over a 10-year period against Jimmy Greaves. Some we won, some we lost. But one of my first experiences of him was in the semi-final of the Cup for Manchester United. This was in 1962. And this was the time of the great sports team, Danny Blanchflower, Dave McKay, Cliff Jones, John White. And it was it was early on in my career with Jimmy Greaves. But anyway, Danny Blanchflower took a quick free kick over the top of the defence, and Greaves was through, as he was a lot of times on his own. And I, as a midfield player, was running back. Wasn't going to get anywhere near him, but I had a great view of what he was doing. Mm. I think it was David Gaskell was in goal. And looking, the running back, watching him, he made the goal look a mile wide. He used to take like into the inside right position, left-footed, and he looked like the goalkeeper was standing on the touchline. That was what a genius does when they get through. You see, a lot of players who are not good finishers, the goalkeeper looks like a giant. You're never going to go past him. Greaves, when he got through, and I was running behind him, and I thought, well, he's going to just get that in his left foot, inside of his left foot, and just place it over the, which he did. But he made the goal look a mile wide. He was absolutely brilliant. He was one of the great players. And we played against him regularly, but Norman Hunter used to hate him. You know, we played a match to start of the season, and Jimmy Greaves, I think he was playing a little bit in midfield, but we won 3-0, 3-1, and Greaves scored. And Norman said, I don't know how he does it, he said. He hasn't had a kick of the ball all match, and he still scored against me. He used to score against everybody regularly, you know. But he was absolutely brilliant, Nathan. One of the great players.
And from such a young age, so comes in at 17, scores 22 league goals as a 17-year-old for Chelsea, 32 the year after, 29 the year after, 41 the year after that, before he goes to AC Milan. He's still not even 21 years of age. Yeah. That genius, was it movement? Was it his, when he got on the ball, the technical ability he had? What was it that separated him from the other great strikers of that era?
Well, he'd be a combination of all that, Nathan. First of all, he wasn't terribly big, Jimmy. He was very, very quick. Very quick. Great balance. Great control. And could have this, the things that geniuses do, scoring, making the goal look big and making it look as if the goalkeeper's not there. I don't know how they do it, but they do it. Mm. Like Messi does it when he gets through now. But Jimmy Greaves would have been up there with the best of that. Well, you read his goal scoring record there, and he was brilliant at what he did. But didn't have a great shot, Nathan. He didn't score many goals from outside the box. Now and again, left foot. But he didn't have a shot like Bobby Charlton or that. But all through the box, he was so quick, so well balanced. He could beat players, keep his balance, and make it look like the goalkeeper wasn't even there. He had a great attitude too. He wasn't a tackler or anything, Jimmy. Actually, I played against him in Spurs one time, and he got a good tackle on me, and he won the ball, and the referee gave a free kick against him. And right. He said, that's the only bleeding tackle I've won all season. He says, you're giving a free kick against me. So he was that type of lad, you know. Yeah. He was a jolly, jolly type of lad. Not a bad bone in his body, but brave when he had to be brave, Nathan. But as you know, I can't speak too highly about him. He was a genius.
Was he the best striker you ever went up against?
I'd say he's probably the best striker I played against. Yeah. Well, we had Dennis Law as well. I played with Dennis Law for a season. And Dennis was a totally different type of player. You know, Dennis was the most dynamic player I've ever seen. Balls flying across the box. He'd be forced onto it. Brave going in, getting headers and that. So you don't get two players alike. Like Dennis did it in his own way, but Greaves did it in his way. And I think he played for longer and scored more goals than Dennis. Dennis got an injury later on. So both of them were great, but in different ways.
Jimmy Greaves got an injury as well at the worst possible time, which was in the midst of the 1966 World Cup finals. And going into that, he's probably the best striker in European football, you'd imagine, looking at his goal-scoring record in the previous 10 years. And he plays the three group stage matches, victim of a horror tackle. Jeff Hurst gets into the team, and like the rest is literally history then for what Jeff Hurst goes on to achieve. Mm. I don't know if you ever got to speak with Jimmy Greaves or got to know him personally as to how that affected him, because we were at a stage then where the 11 players who started the final for England got a World Cup medal. Jimmy Greaves had to wait till almost a decade ago to get his World Cup medal, which just seems a disgrace, really.
Yeah, well, it was. I mean, the way he was treated after that. I never got speaking to him about it, Nathan, but I think he was very, very unlucky at that particular time, obviously to get an injury. But the two or three matches, that I think, did he play in three of the matches?
Yeah, played the first three.
Yeah, England didn't play well in the first three matches, Nathan. And Jimmy was the type of lad who needed a supply. He wasn't a grafter. You know, he didn't get out chasing people around and that. And he was just unlucky that they didn't make, he didn't miss any chances, they didn't make any chances. So, and Ramsey, now, I think he got an injury, but I'm not so sure it was what put him out of the team. I think Ramsey made a few changes because they didn't play well at all. Actually, he brought Jeff Hurst in, Martin Peters in, he brought Alan Ball in, he got rid of the wingers. Remember, they became wingless wonders. They made a big change. But Jimmy was very unlucky. I think immediately after the World Cup, he got back into the team again. So, like, the two matches that he missed, two or three matches that he missed, happened to be, you know, the semi-final, the quarter-final, semi-finals and finals of the World Cup. But he was back in the team again. He was by far and away the best striker they had over a number of years. He was terribly unlucky not to play in the World Cup winning team.
Your brother-in-law, obviously, Nobby Styles, was part of that group. When you look at that team and like the fact that there has to be a campaign to get Jimmy Greaves an OBE, are they a group of players that in general have been treated quite poorly, that the full brilliance of their achievements haven't been properly acknowledged?
Well, it hasn't. You know, the Bobby Moore, for example. I don't think he got any, certainly didn't get a knighthood. When you look at some of the other sports and some of the things that they did. And other players, I mean, Jeff Hurst, for example, who was a terrific player, got a knighthood. And Trevor Brooking got a knighthood. Jimmy Greaves didn't. And with respect to those particular players I mentioned, I think Bobby Moore and Jimmy Greaves contributed a lot more to the game than those players who were terrific players as well, Nathan. So I don't see any sense in it. I don't see how they do it or how they've done it. And even to this day, Jimmy Greaves hasn't been acknowledged just because he didn't play in the World Cup. Look at all the other things he did do that other people in other sports have had awards and honours. I think it's and the Daily Mail now is making a big deal of Jimmy Greaves, and they're quite rightly too. But Jimmy Greaves should have been well honoured years ago.
Just before we let you go, like that goal scoring record that he had, and you talk about the pitches and nowhere near what they are now. Was it? Do you think it was easier or more difficult to score goals back then?
Well, it wasn't any easier, Nathan.
Right.
No, it wasn't any easier. No, like what I find great. If Jimmy Greaves was playing today, he'd be up there with Messi, Bobby Charlton would, Dennis Law would. They'd be the great players in their day would be great players today.
Right.
And the great players of today would have been great players in those particular days. It was a little bit more difficult because of the state of the pitches. And I'd have to mention that as an old player. You know, some of the mud heaps that you see the players like Bobby Charlton and Dennis Law and Jimmy Greaves being fantastic playing in those pitches. And I could just imagine what they'd be like playing today. Those players that I mentioned today would be the great players of today. And I think the great players of today would have been great players in any era. And Jimmy Greaves definitely would have been one of the greatest players today.
Yeah, and hopefully he gets the recognition he deserves over the coming weeks and months. John, great stuff as always. We'll talk to you next Thursday.
Thanks, Nathan.
All right, John Giles there, coming up in the next hour. Tommy Walsh and Brian O'Driscoll.
Paddy Power and the Football Show. The greatest football partnership since Shearer and Owen.